Alrighty, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, usually along with Tim Kearns. Our whole lineup is all messed up, so as I look at the post that we put up there this morning, we've had a bunch of guys call in sick, so we'll get to that in a minute, but really happy to be joined now by our sort of general manager, Bill Newell. And Bill, we haven't done this in a while, so thanks for helping out.
Ah, no problem.
Appreciate it.
And thanks for the new title. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, well, like I tell Tim, the raise will be in the mail, but don't look for it too soon, okay? So.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, originally, we were scheduled to have Ryan Sheehan, who was the Triton High School hockey coach, on. He hasn't canceled yet. He hasn't called in sick, so hopefully he is okay. I got to turn the volume down here a little bit. I've gone from one computer to another, so let me just adjust the volume. Okay, that's better. Also Mike Grenier will be by at probably around 7:30-ish or so. He's our basketball insider, and we'll talk a little about the Celtics and other stuff in the NBA. We were going to talk a lot of hockey tonight, and we will with Coach Sheehan in just a while. Also want to point out that we've got a couple of more interviews coming up this week with hockey coaches, and we'll talk more about that later on. But I want to bring on Bill because, Bill, you've been so busy with interviews and stuff, and I actually want to start with one of the interviews that you have posted today with a legendary runner in North Shore sports, W.F. Newhall at Swampscott. And I wonder if you'd like to tell me a little bit about that interview, because I think it's so easy to listen to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to. W.F. Newhall III, as he goes by, is 64 years old. And as you remember, Rick, you and I first worked together back at WESX back in the late 70s. That's when I arrived, very late 70s. Probably we'll call it 79 for just to protect myself here. But anyways, we were there in the 80s. We were there in the 80s, and there was one runner on the North Shore. I tell him in the interview that his name seemed to be in the Salem News more than almost anyone else in the area because running is kind of in the summer when it's kind of slow in sports. So he was always in the newspaper, whether it be the high school or his college or these road races that were kind of gearing up at that time back in the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, whether it be the Heritage Days race in Salem he talks about. And it was W.F. Newhall. His name was in the paper as much as Bobby Carpenter. Now, you remember Bobby Carpenter and Bill Kaporis?
Mm-hmm.
There was always a Bobby Carpenter reference on the sports pages of the Salem News, the former prep star and Washington Capital Bobby Carpenter from Peabody in the NHL, and well deserved. I'm not saying it's not deserved, but anyways, those are like two names that were always there, and I think WF was in that. I would put him in that category practically, and he tells stories in this interview that to me I never expected to hear about how he got into running. I won't tip too much away here, but it was kind of an accident. He wasn't a runner. It wasn't like one of those things where he immediately wanted to go out for cross country and become a runner. Not at all, but it all worked. You know, he became competitive in athletics and so it happened. And so it's kind of an unusual story.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't ever really in teaching. I don't think maybe he was for a little while. He is actually going back at Swampscott to do a stint as a kind of a long-term sub for a few weeks coming up, I think probably this week, actually. And he went back to Swampscott High School, where he graduated from. He's in the Hall of Fame there. And he is a track coach, winter, spring track coach there, one of the track coaches, and he's a cross-country coach in the fall. And anyway, so, you know, it was kind of neat meeting him, and we did it in person. And he joined this thing. This is the premise of the whole story, is that in his lifetime now, competitively, he's run, or not competitively, but in training and in races, he's run 100,000 miles. And there's a club of people, and there's some links on the website, on the post, to that organization. And so he's in that club of 100,000 miles of running in his pretty much 50-year running career.
That's what drew my attention, because, Bill, I started running at age 28, and I've run till about just about this past year, which is more than 40 years. And I calculated I've done enough to go around the world once plus. I've done probably about 30,000 miles. And so when you're talking 100,000 miles in that same time frame, a hundred thousand miles in that same time frame, it's mind-boggling because that's three times as much as what I've done, and I used to run 7 days a week.
Yeah. No, I know. And so, I mean, he's a serious runner, or was a serious runner, and he still runs to this day, as he tells us. But anyways, WF Newhall, and again, if you're our age, that's a name that rings a bell. There's a photo of him there.
Yeah, I saw that.
Next to the Hall of Fame plaques at the New Swampscott High School, outside the gymnasium. And his mother's in the Hall of Fame there at Swampscott High School as well. So that's listed there. It's all noted in the post or whatever.
Great story. And I said it's easy listening. If you're doing the dishes or something like that or cooking, man, check it out because it's very and it's a great storytelling episode too. A couple of other things, Bill. You have an interview up there with St. Mary's Spartans girls basketball coach, which really, really rings a bell because the last time I saw Jeff Newhall, you and I were at Boston Garden on the day that everything shut down for COVID in 2020.
Yeah. He's obviously they've been very successful in athletics at St. Mary's, and girls basketball certainly one of those premier sports there, defending state champs. They're at North Andover tonight, a 6:30 game, so that's already underway. And the boys are not playing tonight, but they're 9-1 on the season. So if you figure a high school basketball season's 20 games, they're halfway there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The halfway mark, and here we are, January 9th or so. So maybe they can get a couple extra games because they did the Florida thing. But yeah, they're back at it. They didn't lose a lot off of last year's team, so they're going to be they're in the mix to compete again and continue on deep into that state tournament.
Pretty amazing legacy. I did see a story in the Salem News. I forget who it was by, sort of summarizing St. John's Prep state championships this past year. And the sports that we have in the area, the teams, whether they have fantastic records or not, is something that you and I and Tim and Marty, we just love covering because there's so many great stories. And we continue to learn stuff about all of this. But one of the things I really enjoy that you do is with the Salem News sports writers, and every chance I get, I tell Phil, Matt, Nick, and Nick how much I enjoy it. It's because of the information that they put out, but also the passion, the encyclopedic knowledge they have, and they know so many kids so well. And you've got another episode coming up this week.
Yeah, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., check it out. It'll be posted up on the website. And, you know, what's very interesting here, to me anyways, we actually just recorded it this afternoon, and this week's episode. And I asked them to discuss the Patriots.
Now,
I thought it was kind of a throwaway question to get it out of the way, to be quite honest with you, kind of a question that, hey, the Patriots season just ended. Let's get your thoughts on it because they've come up from time to time during these podcasts, and generally it's 99% all local North Shore stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I'd go with it, and I was—I'm really fascinated. So if you listen to this podcast for the first 5 or 10 minutes, it's on the Patriots, but their insights are brief, concise, and very interesting, I think. And they go back and look at their picks in the NFL from the summer. And it is quite interesting to see what they were saying back then and how it all played out and some other insights on the team. So normally you would think, why would I promote these guys or us talking about the Patriots when all the Boston stations are Patriots, Patriots, Patriots? But some very insightful comments from all these guys, four sports writers on this podcast. It'll be up tomorrow morning, starting at 6 a.m. and then available for the rest of our lives.
we got to mention that, yeah. So, and I was talking to Derek Geary a little while ago, and we're going to have an interview with him, the Gloucester High School hockey coach. That'll be posted later on, if not tonight, then tomorrow. It was funny, Bill, just to let you know, Derek said, hey, how come you guys aren't broadcasting hockey games? He said, I love listening to them on the radio, especially when I'm in my car. So, it's a we got
a question. There's a question for you, Rick.
Yeah, I know. We got a resounding vote of one, so you know.
Yeah,
it could happen.
There you go.
It could happen.
Well, it is, you know, it might be worth. You and I don't talk. We used to do more of these Q and A back and forth things, but you know that. You know, when you mentioned COVID, when it struck a couple of years ago, we were doing a lot of games on, you know, live mm-hmm. radio broadcasts, if you will, from the website, audio of games, and had a lot of listeners in football and basketball and hockey. But, you know, since COVID, a lot of teams are doing these video streams of games, and there is less. And then we weren't doing them for a while because mm-hmm. you weren't able to do them.
Right.
And I took some time off. But anyways, the fact is that people now, you know, are kind of clicking on these video streams, which are great, you know, good for them.
Absolutely.
And I think we can serve people in a different way. So sometimes people may want to ask that question, why not the broadcast? But for the most part, it's most effective for us to go to a game, get some interviews, do some scores, do these podcasts and get these coaches and people on the air and do it that way. That's what we're thinking. Our email address is up there.
There you go.
Always email us with any thoughts or comments. Please do that. It's on the website. Once in a while, we pop it on a post, too, but it's there.
You know, Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer, and many, many years ago, we couldn't decide what game we wanted to broadcast, so we actually put up a survey, you know, an unscientific survey. So I'm thinking we could pull an Elon Musk here and just ask people, hey, do you want us on or not? And see what happens. Well, anyway.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, really. I'll have to see if Bill can.
Be careful of what you wish for there.
Oh, my God, I know. You're right, because some of our technology is is aging, including the guy behind the mic here. Bill, anything else? And I appreciate your filling in for Tim Kearns. Tim not feeling too well tonight, and Coach Dunbar also not feeling too well tonight. We'll have them both back, of course. But I appreciate your stopping by. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, you know, there's a lot of illness, and I think a lot of time, you know, and there's that, you know, you and I went through this like a couple of weeks, the week before Christmas, you and I both had a bunch of interviews scheduled with different people, and we got canceled due to illness, and now we're back at it again, apparently, with some of this illness. So so we feel you out there, folks, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This illness out there, and there's a lot of it out there, so, you know, I think we need to put the masks back on it.
Oh, God, I know, sad but true. Anyway.
I'm kidding, folks.
Yeah, so many things. But I tell you, Bill, I know that you're busy and you got to get back to work tonight, so thanks for stopping by and filling in.
No, I don't. I'm not working tonight.
Yeah, okay. Not at all. All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow, Bill. Thanks.
Yeah, and just for the folks know, on the bottom of this post, there are some games listed there tonight. Not that we have the scores or anything like that, because they're not done yet, most of them. But just that the local schedule is up there with a couple of notes. So there you go.
All right, Bill. Check with you in the morning. Thank you.
Yeah,
all right.
Take care.
That is Bill Newell, my partner, my business partner. He is Mr. Everything. He does everything here. He runs the whole show. And does such a great job. A long time, icon, really, in sports, journalism here on the North Shore. And he was one who really got WESX off the ground in terms of local high school sports and bringing it home and was, really, just a great, and he's still doing it. So I appreciate his stopping by. And again, Tim, if you are listening, get well, brother. I know that, you're not feeling well. And, whatever the heck this is that's going around is not fun. Primarily flu. In most cases, and it sticks around for a while. Coach Dunbar also, Coach, is trying to rest tonight as well. So, we will take a break and come back with, keeping my fingers crossed, the Triton High School hockey coach, Brian Sheehan, and they're off to a pretty darn good start as well. This is MSO New Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening. I'll be back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up. The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we are happy to be joined now by Ryan Sheehan, who is the Triton High School hockey coach. And, Coach, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Rick?
Well, I'm knocking on wood as I say it, because we had several guys calling sick tonight. Tim Kearns is out sick. Coach Dale Dunbar of Winthrop is out sick. So hanging on, yeah. How have you guys done in terms of all the stuff that's gone around?
We're almost like the little engine that could. We haven't got hit by sickness too bad, so.
Excellent.
I'm knocking on wood as well.
Yeah, I know, and I hate to bring it up because a couple of years ago I mentioned something to a football coach, and he said, no, we haven't had any injuries. Of course, the next game.
So far, so good.
There you go.
As far as health goes.
Okay, let's look at the record here, Coach, because you guys are off to a pretty darn good start. You're making some headway, certainly making some noise on the North Shore, and you're scoring goals at a pretty good clip as well. But I think I want to start at the most recent and kind of go backwards. How big was this 3-1 win over Amesbury the other night?
Oh, very big. I mean, they're one of the better teams in the Cape Ann League, and you know, it was coming off of a game that we won 9-0, and against a team that I think, you know, they got some younger guys, and so, but against Amesbury, it was a battle. They got big guys, they got some seniors, they got some skill, and some solid defensemen. So, 3-1 was great. I thought we played good, mm-hmm. and it was an up and down game with, you know, highly contested with some hitting, and you know, getting a good 3-1 win against a good team is always good.
I haven't been able to look up the details of that game. Can you give me a quick recap on it, and who was your firepower on offense?
Yeah, we were started off by Luke Sullivan. He had a good individual effort coming over, and then he actually got knocked down trying to go outside in on a guy, and found the puck still on his stick, got it back to his feet, and snapped one in for our first goal. It was 1-0 for, I think, into the second period, and Gavin Colby scored on an N10 rush. He stepped over the blue line, ripped one, beat their goalie, who played fantastic. He's a huge goalie.
Mm-hmm.
So he played fantastic, and Gavin ripped one over his left shoulder to make it 2-1. Then it was to make it 2-0. They scored one in the third, to make it a one goal game. And then Jack Rindholm scored the third one with about 2 minutes to go on the clock. So that was the nail in the coffin for that game.
Yeah, I'm looking at the name Fiddler, on your roster, and I go way, way back when there was a Fiddler. He played, played in Boston somewhere. There were a couple of famous Fiddlers.
They're relatives.
Are they? Okay. Mike Fiddler and I forget his.
Yeah, Mark Fiddler.
Yep,
and,
yep.
And, this is Colin and Quinn, and I believe their father is cousins with Mark, who actually just got inducted into the BU Hall of Fame.
There you go. And that's funny, because that was so many years ago when I started at Hockey Night in Boston in the 70s. And Mike Fiddler was just tearing him up at the Garden, man. That was something.
It's a huge name, right?
You better believe it. Wow. And I want to ask you about your defense, Coach. You know, Braden McDonald, and you mentioned Lindholm. These guys are your anchors. Are they guys who bring it up ice as well?
Yeah. Both of them can lug it. I think Jack likes to skate a little more. Braden likes to, you know, he's a pass first. He's a very smart defenseman. He's big. He's solid. He's been really good for us this year. Jack can pull away. Jack can get up in the rush and, you know, enter the zone and create a little offense on his own. And then we have a freshman, Michael Taylor, who has been shown to be able to jump up in the rush and score some goals as well. So getting a little offense in the back end is always good.
Oh, man. All right. Big threat from you guys are off to a great start. I want to ask you, too, and I want to be very delicate when I ask this question. You know, you mentioned scoring high against some of the teams, and there are a couple of teams, particularly in the Northeastern Conference, who are, for want of a better word, they've got some real new players on the ice, and I mean that in the most real sense of the word. And so, how does it affect your coaching when you have, when you know you're going to be able to play everybody, and then you still have to come up and face Amesbury like in the next game. So is there a particular mindset?
It's funny you say that, because I had the same conversation with one of my assistant coaches, who says, you know, these games that you expect to win and you expect to win by a couple of goals are kind of a lose-lose, because you can win 6-2 and say, you know, you didn't play that great. You can win 9-0 and still say you didn't play that great. But it is always good to play, you know, all four lines and all six pairs. So,
But it is difficult. Yeah.
You want to just create good habits, you know, in those games. And when you play teams like Amesbury, Newburyport, Linfield, you know, you're ready to go.
Well, on the other hand, you do get those younger kids, some kids who don't get the ice time, maybe even some seniors who work hard at practice, but, you know, don't get to play that much. They do get the ice time. All right, well, you mentioned a couple of other teams, too, and I do want to ask you about Linfield in particular, because they're on top. They're not blowing anybody away, but they're a tough team to beat.
They haven't let up a lot of goals this year, and not letting up a lot of goals and playing solid in your end is going to make you a tough team to beat. And they're also good on special teams. So, as the old adage says, right, clean it up in your own end and win special teams, you can be a pretty solid team. So, they're playing very well.
I'm asking all the coaches, because I'm still learning this game, Coach. I went to high school in Texas many years ago, so I'm still trying to figure it out. In terms of scoring goals, you don't have a lot of snipers, I guess, at the high school level. But you do have guys who have some ability. Are you most of your goals, or do you want to get goals? I guess they call them dirty goals, like, you know, when Esposito used to stand in the slot there.
That's what you preach. That's the place you have to get to. Believe me, I'm not a goal scorer. I played goalie my whole entire life. So I'm no expert in that at all. But, you know, as a coach, you preach to get to that area. If a kid happens to be a gifted goal scorer, they find ways to score from other areas and find ways to get to that area a little more efficiently. So it's not rocket science, but it is definitely a talent and a certain skill that I think some people are born with.
You know, you talked about the schedule as well. You've got Newburyport coming up on Wednesday.
Wednesday night, yep.
And that's at the Graf, and that's a pretty scary place to play, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always. I mean, they're our rival. I mean, we share the rink with each other, and It's always blown out. It's always loud. It's always a physical game. And, you know, I expect nothing else. You know, they've played against kind of the cream of the crop in the state this year. So, you know, they'll be ready for the speed. They'll be ready for the physicality. So it will be a good game.
Yeah. And then North Reading after that. So it's a tough schedule. Now, what about the rest? I'm looking at Bill Ricca. How'd you line that one up?
Actually, you know what? I got in touch with Coach Egan, about the year before COVID, and we had played one, and you know, they're a good Merrimack Valley team who, you know, churns out good players and physical teams, so it was just kind of one for us to get ready for, and they'll have a good team this year, and so it's good to play against those Merrimack Valley teams.
All right, I think the final thing I want to ask you about is your first two lines anyway. What's the makeup of them, and what are their strengths?
Our first line is three sophomores, Connor Rumpf, Luke Sullivan, and Josh Hersey. Luke possesses the puck well. He's got a quick release. Rumpfer is a, you know, smart hockey player, plays underneath, defensively minded, and Hersey can go dig him out. So it's a good makeup for that line. The second line is senior Layden, who is, you know, pretty physical, you know, hopefully stronger than most of the lines that they'll play against, and a couple guys that can finish. So, you know, we're balanced, which is hopefully good down the stretch.
Pretty scary that you got sophomores up front scoring the way they are. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and anything else you want to mention, Coach? Because I love talking with you guys. The Cal is just, it's so well balanced and so competitive.
No, that's it, Rick. We're looking forward to it. You know, I mean, we're coming down to crunch time. Everyone's finishing up playing their league games around, and gonna get each other for a second time, and we'll really get a feel for each other. So, should be a good finish of the year.
Absolutely, Coach. Thank you so much. I want to check in with you again, but good luck the rest of the way.
Awesome. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Ryan. Take care. That is Ryan Sheehan, who is the high school hockey coach at Triton, and I'd never mentioned the record, did I? They are 4-1-2. And they've scored 32 goals and allowed 11 so far for 10 points. So they're off to a terrific start. And the Cal It's incredibly competitive, and of course, right now Linfield is on top. I believe they're 6-0-1, or 6-1-0, and I don't have. You know what? I can find it. Don't leave the room. Let me just get Linfield's record. Here we go. Bum, ba-ding, ba-ding, ba-doom. Linfield, 6-0-1, and they've scored down 7 games. They've scored 19 points, nine goals, which is not earth-shattering. But when you consider in 7 games, they've only allowed 8. That's pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Pretty amazing, I guess. And then I want to just see one other. Amesbury also is playing extremely well, and they are 5-2 overall. They've scored 22 and allowed 18. So the league in general, as always, very competitive. And I haven't been able to. I put together some standings last week for the Cape Ann League, the Northeastern Conference, and the Catholic Conference. And of course, you know, I'm not very good at Excel. And so all that's out the window. So I'm still looking for online standings, and I know that a couple of places used to have them. I'll check out the Cape Ann League website, and I'll check out the Northeastern Conference website as well to see if they do have that. But anyway, thanks to Coach Sheehan for checking in tonight as Triton off to a terrific start, and we are almost at the halfway point of the season. I think what we'll do is take a break now, and we'll continue on schedule. I've got an emergency interview in the wings if we need it. But I'm pretty sure Mike and I can talk up the Celtics for a while, and we don't have to go the full hour either because this is the internet. So we will take a break, and we'll come back and check in with Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell tonight, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Tim Curran's off tonight, and we'll talk with Winthrop High School hockey coach Dave Dunbar sometime during the week as the Vikings are off to a terrific start as well. The Winthrop Vikings, because there's the Triton Vikings and there's the Rockport Vikings. All right, so let's go. Let's take the break, and we'll be back.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we welcome back now our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And Mike, welcome back. How you doing?
Well, we're good after the holidays, right? We're on to a new year, and we're a year older, I guess.
Yeah, I forgot that it's been a couple of weeks since we've done this. You are correct, and I'm trying to shut the music off here, and this machine ain't cooperating. There we go. And user error, they call that. Yeah, and it the build-up, I love the entire build up to Christmas. I love the secular Christmas as much as I do, being observer of Christmas. And I enjoy the whole month and so on. I'm not crazy about Hallmark, Christmas movies though.
No. Well, you know, however, you wouldn't say that in front of my wife. She watches all of them.
Oh, you said that before. That's right.
Yeah. That's okay. It wouldn't hurt her feelings. She's still going to DVR them and watch them.
Well, I'm DVRing the Celtics tonight, so don't get don't say anything. I guess that's where we want to start. I'm going to start. We've got a lot to discuss here, but I have two. I want to start with your opinion on two games. The absolute debacle at at Dallas. OKC.
Yeah, when they gave up 150 points.
Absolute debacle, and then the rebound against Dallas.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why lately they've been a Jekyll and Hyde team. Okay, and I have no explanation like anybody else. I don't think even Joe Mazzulla, the coach, has an explanation because some nights they turn up the defense and they can beat anybody. when they do that because they have enough offensive firepower. And then some nights, maybe they just disrespect their opponent or they're not mentally prepared. And what happens is a team like OKC, which was missing its best player that night, Rick, missing their best player, their best scorer, and they still scored 150 points on the Celtics. However, it seems to happen to even the elite teams because the Milwaukee Bucks, who certainly could be there at the end against the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, they gave up the other night, a few nights ago, 51 points in the first quarter.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And they had given up 80, and they gave up like 33 in the second. They were down 84 to like 60 at halftime, 84 points on a team that has Giannis Antetokounmpo, arguably, you know, always maybe a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. They gave up 84 points in half, and they lost by like 30. And the coach, you know, Mike Budenholzer, took out all his starters early in the third quarter because he knew it was just pointless to keep him in there.
I didn't see that, and I'm glad you pointed that out. We've seen other teams get slaughtered that shouldn't be as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly. And you know, so it happens to all the teams, and I don't know if it's because an 82-game season and players tend to slack off a little bit every once in a while, but it does happen to every team that they go through their lulls, and the Celtics, fortunately, are still atop the heap in the entire NBA record-wise.
Before we go to the Dallas game, which is a complete mirror opposite, the one thing that infuriated me and Mike, and I don't profess to know anything about basketball, but that OKC team, who's made up a bunch of kids, I guess,
right?
They drove the middle every single play and got layups. And I can't imagine, like, if Tim were here, he'd say, if Dave Cowens were there, that wouldn't happen.
No, you're right. And if Kevin Garnett was there, it probably wouldn't have happened either. He wouldn't have stood up for it.
That was infuriating.
Yeah, it was infuriating, and there's no explanation for it. You don't want to write it off as just one bad game, but I guess when you're playing 82 and then another possibility of another 25 or so in the playoffs, that game will be forgotten if they're in the NBA Finals. So, and like I said, it's happened to even the good teams, whether you're talking the Denver Nuggets or the Nets, who have been playing fantastic, and all these other teams, it happens to them. And there seems to be more offense this year than just about any season that I can remember.
Except that game when they played Dallas, I didn't know what to expect. And you couldn't you feel it, Mike, the way they were playing? You could just see they were dialed in. You and I texted the night of the OKC team,
right,
and I said they quit. They fell asleep. They stopped playing, but they didn't show up. But in the Dallas game, from the opening tip, man, their defense was dialed in. And Robert Williams played in that game, I believe, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yes, he did. And they also lost, didn't they? Lose Marcus Smart during the game with a knee contusion.
Mm-hmm.
He's not playing tonight here against the Chicago Bulls on Monday night at the Garden. So I thought, like, from the get-go, like you said, you can see it sometimes even in their faces that they're more committed, they're more engaged. They were certainly didn't want to lose to the Dallas Mavericks and have an empty, kind of a really bad road trip. So they clamped down on defense, and because they clamped down on defense, it led to some really good offensive opportunities. And they did a phenomenal job on Luka Doncic, who shot it very poorly that night.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was a complete, they did a 180 compared to the previous two nights before that when they played OKC. So, yeah, it, just like the, you know, it's the good and the bad and the ugly. So, now they seem to be back on the right track. I think they've won six of their last eight. They've got the next two at home, the Bulls and a New Orleans Pelicans team that ordinarily would be a real challenge with Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, but both of those guys are out with injuries. So you could see a couple more wins coming up here if they have the same attitude coming out of the gate as they did in that Dallas game. So
I listen to, and I rarely listen to Boston talk radio, but something that actually made sense the other day, and I usually tune them in to see if they're interviewing anybody because I don't want to hear 4 hours of the same criticisms, but
right,
and negativity. But I don't even know what station was on, but they were talking about the coaching of Jim Montgomery for the Bruins and how he said during the Winter Classic that, you know, Bergeron more or less told him to shut up. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And don't stop worrying about it. We're going to be fine. And then somebody else, Nick Foligno in the locker room took over the locker room. And so they were talking about less is more. And it might have been Christopher Gasper, whom I very much respect.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Is there some of that perhaps, and I get to, I'm going to ask that because of the response that Jaylen Brown had after that OKC team. He did not hesitate to criticize himself and his teammates.
Right.
And do you think there's some of that with Coach Mazzulla saying, he's trying to find a balance, okay, when do I let these guys have the room and how can I guide them? Because he's younger than Horford.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Absolutely. I believe Mazzulla's just trying to find his way. Rick, I believe that he's still almost, well, he's a rookie coach, and like you said, he's much younger than most coaches in the league. Might be the youngest coach in the league, right? And he's got a group of core veterans, young core veterans like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who could certainly carry a team. He's got a wise old mind like Al Horford. He's got a young veteran like Derek White, who's been playing great all year.
Oh, yeah.
Marcus Smart, who's been around 8 years. And I think sometimes he's going to have to let the players take the room as long as it doesn't get out of hand,
mm-hmm.
because he's learning on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's learning on the fly, much like Ime Udoka did last year, because the Celtics at this point last year were nowhere. They were around a 500 team or below 500, and they found that spark like in the second half of the season. This year, of course, get off to a much better start. They were the talk of the NBA, still are to a certain degree, but they were at two or three losses after 20 games, and people were talking about them winning 65, 68 games, and that's no longer going to be the case. However, Mazzulla was hands-off, obviously, during that stretch because they were playing near-perfect basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
Not defensively, but certainly on offense. And now they hit the skid, and I don't know what goes on. Nobody knows what goes on in the locker room, but I have a feeling that Missoula's relying on guys like Horford and Marcus Smart in particular, because Marcus Smart, along with Jaylen Brown, is a hard-nosed guy in terms of not being scared of criticizing himself and his teammates and his team about getting it together. And Jason Tatum, I believe, has also taken a step forward in that respect. I think he's always talking about being a role model for the younger players, being a role model for his teammates, because he's considered an elite player, and he's playing like one all year. So I believe, along with that, when you're an elite player, you have more clout in the locker room. And I think that's what's happened to Jason Tatum this year. So I believe Mazzulla is still finding his way. We're not sure how great a coach he is yet, because that will be determined, I think, when you have those seven-game series against the Philadelphia 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks and the Golden State Warriors or the Memphis Grizzlies or the Denver Nuggets, whoever they're going to face in the playoffs. That's how we're going to find out how good a coach Joe Mazzulla is, because the bench gets a little shorter, the games are tighter, every mistake is magnified, and you get a lot of close games. So Mazzulla so far, I think, is doing a nice job, but it remains to be seen, because you have to have a full season to play it out, see how it goes.
Yeah, I thought there was when Robert Williams came back, there was a little disturbance in the force in terms of rotation, but that seems to have settled down.
Yep. I'll say this about Robert Williams. I know we want to talk defense, Rick, and I'm more than happy to do that. The thing that I don't like about Robert Williams, I mean, I love him coming back. I love his all-around hustle, his defense. But, I see big men hitting those 15-foot jumpers and the little 12-foot baseline jumpers and all that. And with all the absence that Robert Williams has had because of injuries, and of course he's had to rehab and he's been on the court 3-on-3 or playing by himself, working out, I don't understand why he still doesn't have a basic foul line jumper, or something that would enable the offense to have one more little weapon there, because obviously he's great at offensive rebounding and dunking the ball off lob passes, and he's so quick to the ball under the basket. However, he still doesn't have that little, not even a mid-range game. It could be just a little 8 or 10 footer. He kind of reminds me of Ben Simmons. It's like he doesn't want to take the shot.
No,
he doesn't, because he doesn't have any confidence in any kind of offense. He hasn't developed, and I feel that's like a little flaw in his game, a little hole in his game that he needs to work on here in the next year or so, because you can't rely on Jason Tatum and Brown to get you 30 every night. Although they do. But you can't count on that every night. So if they can give him 3 or 4 baskets from 10 or 12 feet out, to me that takes enormous pressure off Brown, Tatum, Marcus Smart, Derek White, Hauser, whoever, all the guys who also score, Brogdon, I love the way, I know both you and I are Malcolm Brogdon fans. This guy it could be a possible sixth man of the year candidate as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. You know, I think it was Gasper again when you talk about Robert Williams' offense. Gasper is an eloquent writer. And, you know, there are times I have to look up words.
Oh, sure. I think we all do. Yeah.
Because, like, wow. And he's so spot on. And he did mention, and it was almost poetry the way he wrote it about Robert Williams' disdain for touching the basketball because, did you see that backcourt? I think it was in Dallas. He got rid of the ball so fast that the guy he threw it to hadn't crossed the line yet. And so it was backcourt. He just didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. But he's a magnificent defensive player. And, you know, obviously an intimidating force. I think we've seen him enough now, especially since he's come back from the injury, that players don't like to go into the paint against opposing players because even he can slide over off his own man, and he's so quick on his feet that he's capable of blocking or bothering shots by just about anybody in the league, you know? So, yeah, we love that aspect of his game, but I just wish he would add just a little bit of offense to his repertoire, to his resume, because it would make him that much better. It would make the Celtics even more of a threat than they already are.
When I texted you the other night about defensive players, I was focused on Derek White playing a complete game. And the thing is, I talked with Coach Dale Dunbar, Winthrop hockey coach, who knows Taylor Hall quite well. And Taylor Hall for the Bruins, he plays three-zone hockey, and for a superstar offensive guy, I don't know how common that is, but I watch him, and I think, okay, boy, you can trust this guy, and it gets the guy out of the zone. Then I'm watching Derek White, and I'm thinking the same thing. You can trust this guy. You can trust him to lead the offense, to blow away on offense, but you can also trust him to get back, and that's what prompted me to ask you about who are the best defensive players for the Celtics, and I guess what I'm asking in terms of all-around basketball skill, because right now Robert Williams is the best defensive player, but he doesn't have a complete game yet.
Right, right. Well, you know what? Let's get back to Derek White in a minute, because it's funny, when I texted you and said, do you want me to discuss analytics? And you said, no, let's do the regular eye test. Well, naturally, that sent me scrambling looking at analytics.
I knew it would.
And I'll show you, and I'll tell you why, because here's the background on the point I'm going to make, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ordinarily, with the eye test, we say, okay, Marcus Smart's a great defensive player. Derek White has been playing great on defense. Jason Tatum, again,
yep.
A guy I think who's made a gigantic leap as a defensive player this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I looked at one set of analytics, player by player throughout the NBA, and Kyrie Irving is ranked as the 19th best defensive player in the NBA.
Ooh, really?
Kyrie Irving.
Really?
And in our same list of that same criteria, Marcus Smart is ranked 54th.
Wow.
So here's my logic, though. Say, with the eye test, if you say you're ahead by 1 point, you're Doc Rivers, you're ahead by 1 point, and Donovan Mitchell of the Cleveland Cavaliers was having a great year, got the ball for the last shot. If you're Doc Rivers, do you think you'd rather have Kyrie Irving guarding Donovan Mitchell or the 54th ranked Marcus Smart?
Great point.
So my point is this. Analytics, to me, you can throw them out the window because different sets of criteria are applied to different lists. And, for example, I saw Giannis Antetokounmpo rated third in one set of analytics and 19th using different criteria. So you can twist analytics around to favor your own players or to favor your own agenda. Whereas with the eye test, we watch players night in and night out. We kind of watch the Celtics 82 games a year. We can't get to the other 29 teams for 82 games a year, but we see enough
mm-hmm.
where we can make, with the eye test, pretty good analysis on players. So that brings me to my point that, okay, Kyrie Irving, on some other list, by the way, wasn't even in the top 100, even though he's ranked 19th and 1. So therefore, yes, I would rather have, the bottom line is, and I think Doc Rivers, if I could sit next to Doc Rivers and say, hey, Doc, I think we should have Marcus Smart on Donovan Mitchell on that play. And he'd say, yeah, Mike, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nobody in his right mind would want Marcus Smart guarding a good offensive player on the final possession of a game, whereas any coach would want Marcus Smart guarding a good player on the last play of the game. So
that's
my point about analytics.
Great story.
Now,
Well, maybe that's what I was thinking subconsciously because we've heard so much about, you know, I'm a mathematician. I teach mathematics. I'm a logician.
Right.
And I understand how you can manipulate statistics. And I think it has gotten so out of hand with computer geeks right now in professional sports, especially baseball, that it's dampened the sport. And so that's fascinating story about Kyrie and his defense. That's amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. But now to get to the Celtics players, because that's going to be our points that we want to make tonight, I agree with you about Derek White. I think actually, even in analytics, he's rated pretty high on any set of analytics. But also, too, we have to start with the guy who, you know, if it starts with defense, you got to start with Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, he's the reigning defensive player of the year, and we've seen no drop-off in his effectiveness.
Right.
He gets banged up a lot, Rick, because he plays such a physical game on defense, and he gives him as much offense as he can. However, he knows his job, number one, is to be the defensive leader. I think the way that Jason Tatum thinks of himself as an offensive leader for the Celtics, Marcus Smart says, okay, I'm going to score by 10 or 12 points in the flow of the game, but my focal point is to spark the team defensively, not just spark us, but to make game-changing plays, to create turnovers, to when a team seems to be relaxed on defense, to make the big play, to get them thinking, okay, we need to play, commit all of us, all five of us, to defense. So I think it always starts with him. I still consider him way above average throughout the league as a defensive player. Who knows if he's going to be the defensive player of the year. However, I haven't seen any slackening off between last year and this year. So we start with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next guy we can talk about, well, we've talked about Robert Williams a bit, how effective he is. But he doesn't play nearly the minutes, obviously, that Jason Tatum does. And mm-hmm. I think, to me, I've seen Tatum. This is what I love about Tatum this year. Yes, he will be an MVP candidate, I think. We're halfway there right now, 40 games. And I think he's going to be there at the end with Jokic and Giannis and Kevin Durant, who's having a great year, and Giannis from the Milwaukee Bucks and maybe a couple other players. But I think that Jason Tatum has become just an elite all-around player.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean we've seen him take it to the basket and not settle for three-pointers all the time. We've seen him get to the foul line more. We see him committing to defense. We see his leadership ability. And to me, his defense has been one of the major improvements that is overlooked because on a national level, people see him, oh, here's Jason Tatum. He's averaging 30 points a game, 31 points a game. He's in the top five. But when you see him, we see him on a nightly basis and on 82 games. And to me, through the first 40 games, I think, you know, this is the best defense he's ever played in his career through half a season here. I just think he's elevated it to another level. He's not going to block shots like Robert Williams. However, his man-on-man defense and not allowing his offensive guy to go crazy on him and to get uncontested layups and all. He makes a real strong commitment to defense that I think is difficult for him because he is playing 35, 36 minutes a game. And the Celtics look for him to get anywhere from 25 to 50 points. So most players who are in that category, as we've seen in the past with superstar players, if they're going to relax on one end of the floor, it's going to be on the defensive end.
Right.
But I haven't seen that.
No, and that's interesting because I think it was you or Tim or someone a couple of weeks ago said, you know, even Bill Russell would take a playoff because he could.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was out there for 48 minutes. And the thing about Tatum, I'm just wondering, Mike, I haven't, God, I'm knocking on wood again as I say this, I haven't seen him crybaby very much about fouls. And so when he thinks he's fouled on an offensive layup or whatever, he used to stand there and argue. But he's getting back now. That has to help his defensive performance as well, I presume.
No question. I also think, because he's taking on a leadership role, he wants to get back on defense because he doesn't want guys like Peyton Pritchard and Hauser and other guys on the bench to say, look at it, here's our superstar player, he's not getting back on defense. You know, maybe we don't have to get back on defense.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's setting the example. And that brings me to the next guy, Jaylen Brown. I also think he's an above-average defender, definitely an exceptional defender. He is so athletic, Rick. How many times have we seen him make these acrobatic layups, sometimes even more acrobatic than Jason Tatum?
Yes.
He makes these acrobatic drives and dunk shots and shots high off the glass, and he goes to the foul line afterwards for and one. And then on the other end of the court, I've seen him come back because of his great quickness and block shots going like three quarters of the length of the court to block a shot or to bother a shot. I think, to me, that's another guy who's committed on defense. And you're talking about a guy who's also averaging 27, 28 points a game, who's playing with that level of energy to also play great defense. So, and I put him in the above average category, and we talked, you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned Derek White, because he is considered certainly a terrific defensive player on the all-around level, and, you know, he's given the Celtics a good offense too. So Derek White is not the most sturdily built guy. He looks more fragile. He doesn't look fragile, but he's certainly not as sturdily built as Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. But yet, he's got that good enough athleticism to get back. And I love the timing. He's blocked several shots this year that I thought were impossible to block because his timing has been impeccable. And he gets to the offensive player's right hand or left hand where he anticipates the shot is coming from, and he blocks it. So I think he's been a tremendous addition to the team in terms of his defensive ability. So, you know, so you have three or four good defenders right there, right among your core group. And, of course, Al Horford, who, again, when I looked up the analytics, I saw Al Horford listed in the top 40 or 50 in one set of criteria and not even on the list on the other set of analytic criteria. So I think Horford, I think his age is starting to show a bit. He's still a solid player, but when he plays the really good big men like an Embiid or a Jokic or some of these other big guys, they've been able to take advantage of him a little bit because I think his quickness has diminished a little bit, just enough where teams try to target him if they're going inside. So that doesn't mean he's still a valuable piece of the Celtics puzzle because he's such a solid all-around player. But I think he has been losing a little bit of that defensive aptitude, you know. So I, you know, that's the one guy that I wouldn't put in the, like, exceptional defensive category, you know.
All right.
So we have that, and of course, you know, and then the other guys, you know, you talk Sam Howell that comes in, his job is to shoot the ball. I saw one play last week when he was trying to bring the ball over half court. If you probably remember the play, Rick, he was trying to bring the ball over half court, and he was being hounded by a defender, and the guy just stole the ball from him.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's not a good ball handler.
Yep.
So how do they have to find spots for him where he doesn't have to handle the ball, where he comes off picks and pick and pop, and he's a shooter from outside, and he does a good job of that, obviously. But you don't want him. I think teams do try to take advantage of him because of his lack of quickness. I think defensively teams target him. So, you know, if you can keep him out of the mix and focus and funnel the ball towards other defenders, that's the best policy that the Celtics have, and I'm sure Joe Mazzulla doesn't need to be notified of that. He knows what the deal is with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the guys. Are we missing anybody? I mean,
yeah, Brogdon.
Brogdon. Oh, how can we forget about him, Rick? He's averaging 13.5 points a game. I honestly think he could be the sixth man of the year, although I've mentioned Bobby Portis of the Bucks, who's averaging like 17 or 18 a game, been playing fantastic. But Brogdon is, to me, a very intelligent defensive player. I also say that about his offense, too, because we've seen him take it to the basket how many times this year already, and he either converts the layup or he gets it to an open shooter. I think defensively he's the same way. He doesn't give any ground. He's strong enough to hold his ground against just about anybody. He doesn't have the greatest quickness, but he's athletic enough to make good plays. And I think when you talk about overall team defense, he's not a weak link. He's a very good defender. So I think Brogdon's one of the most valuable players on that team.
I didn't even know who he was when he came to the team, and then as I watched him, you know, they talk about the eye test. It's like, man, he just doesn't screw up. And then so that's one thing, which ain't necessarily that great. You know, he doesn't screw up. But then you look at him and say, well, wait a minute. He also makes plays.
he's an asset, I think, on both ends of the floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was an interesting comment by, I think it was Brian Scalabrine, or when the game started, Brogdon had not been shooting the three-pointer well for a couple of games, okay? But it might have been Scalabrine or whoever said that he was out in the pregame an hour or two before the game practicing from various spots on the floor to get his three-point game back in order. And sure enough, the game began, and he hit his first couple of threes, or three of his first five, or whatever it was. And I thought, you know, that's a guy who works on his craft. He works on his game. He's not going to just relax and settle for anything. He's kind of a still young veteran player, still got some good years left in him. And he doesn't want to go into any kind of slump. So therefore, he works on his perceived weaknesses, even if they're only if those weaknesses are only apparent for two or three games, he'll work on those weaknesses in pregame and in practice. And, a lot of teams would love to have Brogdon starting, even, and not just coming off.
There are guys, Mike, because I grew up with the Celtics when I moved to Massachusetts. In fact, I used to listen to the Celtics when I was in Texas in high school. Yeah. And that was way back. To me, the quintessential Celtic is a guy like Malcolm Brogdon or Marcus Smart. Not taking anything away from anybody else, but you know what I'm talking about in terms of, the John Havlicek type.
Yes, they're showing up every game and they're going to give you their best effort every game and they're going to show their best side, their best ability in every game. They know it's a long season. They know there are going to be some games that are going to be much better than others. And they're saying, you know what? I just want to be ready for the playoffs. I'm going to be consistent for 82, and then I turn it up a notch in the playoffs. And I think that's the type of player Malcolm Brogdon is. I can't believe that the Bucks or some of these teams that let him go, or I'm not quite sure of his contract situation, how he ended up choosing the Celtics. However, a lot of teams missed the boat on him when he was available, and I'm so glad that the Celtics made a move to get him.
And you know what's funny? It was Gallinari we were all going gaga over, so... And he's still yet to play. So that's a story for another day. Let's get to the Power Five, Mike.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, the Power Five, well, we've had 2 weeks to see more developments, right, Rick?
So up and down, yep.
I think we're going to have to go. I think I'm going with the Cleveland Cavaliers at the number five spot because they're playing better than the Milwaukee Bucks. So I'm going with them at the number five spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with the Memphis Grizzlies at the number four spot. Their record is 26-13. They're right up there, basically, with the Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. They've been a tremendous team. I'm going to go with the Denver Nuggets at the number three spot. They're basically tied with the Memphis Grizzlies for the top spot in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
However, they've won like eight of their last 10. I'm going to go. This is going to hurt Celtics fans.
I know where you're going.
I have to go with the Celtics at the number two spot.
Yep.
Because, let's face it, the Brooklyn Nets on November 27th,
yep,
looked this up, they were 10-11. 10-11. And right now, they are 27-13. So, I have to say, they've won 17 of their last 19. And I think that gives them an edge. Although, overall, right now, they're still one game behind the Celtics, who are 28-12. I have to put the Nets right now at the number one spot and the Celtics at the number two spot. And, of course, now what happens is, how will the Nets be with Kevin Durant's injury? He injured a knee last night in a one-point win over the Miami Heat, and he's going to be out for at least 2 to 3 weeks, maybe longer, with a MCL injury. And I wouldn't expect the Nets to keep up this kind of pace, 17 out of 19, if he's out of the lineup for any length of time.
All right. Great stuff. Great analysis. I love the stuff that you brought up about analytics versus the eye test. When I texted you that the other night, I just didn't want to make more work. I wanted to have some fun with this, and by God, you did have fun with it. So
it was fun to be able to look up and see where are these guys. And I got to say, one analytics list, Rick, did list four Celtics in the top 35 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they listed Marcus Smart, they listed Derek White, they listed Jason Tatum, and they listed Jaylen Brown.
Cool.
So it shows you that there is some legitimacy, I guess, to some of the analytics, because the eye test, we also confirm, I think, seeing them on a nightly basis, that those guys are really good defensive players.
Yeah, and
Robert Williams, of course, he's not in there because he hasn't missed so many games early in the season, and he's playing, 20 minutes a game or whatever it is. But certainly, I want Robert Williams on the floor in the playoffs against in a close game.
I
want him there for his defensive presence.
Situational play versus analytics. All right, you want a new assignment, Mike?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Rick. Throw it at me.
All right, here it comes. Over the years, I have not been a LeBron James fan.
Yes.
Over the years, I've seen what good he does off the court. He does a lot of wonderful things for people. Over the years, I've seen this guy destroy the NBA in a good way. I mean, he's commanded and controlled it. I want your opinion on where LeBron stands in terms of the legacy of NBA basketball. And I mean that from, again, the eye test. Everybody knows his statistics.
Sure.
But the eye test on the kind of player he is, the kind of play that has uplifted other players around him that I just didn't think he did, but he did. And then, you know, balance that against his publicity stunts.
Absolutely. Of course, yeah, because obviously he's doing this right now at age 38, and obviously it's an astonishing thing that he can perform at such a high level at age 38, but we'll talk about that next week.
I love it, and of course, bring your power. It won't be next week, Mike, because we're going up skiing, and we'll be back Monday, but I'm not going to work Monday night. It's a holiday.
I don't blame you, and we'll have more time to discuss this 2 weeks from now.
All right, and we'll be texting anyway. So, Mike, thank you. Be well. You and your family be well, and we'll talk soon.
You guys have a good time skiing.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, that's our inside basketball insider, Mike Grenier, who is also a sports journalist, sports historian, and as you might suspect, a pretty good specialist in observing the NBA and breaking things down. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. Dale Dunbar, get well. Tim Kearns, get well. And we'll see everybody next week. And as Bill mentioned, 2 weeks rather, our email address is msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. And just curiously, if you are interested in our going back to doing some live broadcasting of high school sports games, let us know. It's been difficult, not difficult, but we sort of ceded the field to those video partisans who do so well covering the games all over the North Shore, all over Eastern Massachusetts. But let me know, because we still have the capability of doing streamcasts on audio here at MSO News Sports. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Be well. We'll see you in 2 weeks. For Bill Newell, Tim Kearns, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.